Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for November the 6th in the year of our Lord, 2023. This is Hour 2 of 2, the goal always to promote God, family, and country, to protect life, liberty, and property, and to do so on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. We need to be a peaceful light on a hill, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we need to do. I'll tell you that right now. All right, welcome to the show. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org with us. And Utah State Representative Phil Lyman announced his run for governor. What do you think of that, Lowell?
Oh, I love it, Sam. Delighted with his courage and his desire to serve the people, because he's one of us, Sam. He's not an elitist. He's felt the brunt of the police state personally, having spent some time in jail simply because he was asserting his rights in San Juan County. And he's a good man. I'm delighted with his candidacy. And I've supported him. I've donated to his campaign, and I encourage all good Utahns to do likewise.
Couldn't agree more. We'll get Phil on the radio with us here soon to discuss his incredible candidacy, and our prayers are with Phil, that's for sure. Glenn Beck decided that he wants to be a dual citizen. He wants to become a citizen of Israel. I think that's a less than wise idea personally, but he doubled down and said he didn't know why he was born and wants to just absolutely join Israel. Do you want to respond to that, Lowell?
Well, I don't know, really understand a lot about citizenship with other countries, but I think the citizenship in the United States is probably the best option at this point. I think that Israel is surrounded by countries that dislike her, and they are the fourth strongest nation militarily in the world. I'll give them that. I just don't know whether I would renounce my U.S. citizenship for that of another country at this point. Sam?
Yeah, he's hoping to have dual citizenship like a lot of the congressmen and senators do. It's a recent, in my opinion, mistake to even allow dual citizenship. What we're talking about is allegiance, right?
That's right. And is he going to be fully allegiant to Israel? I mean, the U.S. involvement, interventionist involvement with so many other countries is just truly embarrassing. There is no warrant in the Constitution for the U.S. to give aid to other countries, number one. And number two, it always results in worse outcomes that than are intended. And so I don't mind his support of Israel if he wants to do that personally, but I do mind the governmental support. I don't believe it's right or appropriate for the U.S. government to
now, if he
to
wants
give
to go ahead and sail away,
countries.
Come sail away and sail to Israel and decide he wants to become an Israeli citizen and jettison his U.S. citizenship, I'm okay with that, I guess, if that's what he wants to do. I don't believe in dual citizenship, Lowell.
Well, I think you have some good reasons. I've never really explored this topic with you or with anybody, but I sure love to hear your reasoning.
Well, all I can tell you is it has to do with allegiance, and the United States is a unique country, and our founders warned us of foreign entanglements. And if I have dual citizenship, I've got a foreign entanglement. And if you have thousands of Americans with foreign entanglements and debates on allegiance, how do you stand together as a light on a hill as a peaceful country? How do you stand with the supreme law of our land with the checks and balances? How do you stand with a Second Amendment? As one citizen, you have a Second Amendment right, and as another citizen, you have a, quote, privilege to have a gun upon government permission. And, okay, you've got all these problematic divides. A house divided cannot stand. So, to me, it's very clear. I don't hate Israel. Believe it or not, I don't hate Hamas either. I just want to stay the heck out of it. But right now we've got basically, you know, the conservatives supposedly back in Israel spending a gazillion dollars. Joe's back in Hamas spending a gazillion dollars. And I'm saying we need to get the heck out of it all.
Well, I'm with you on that point, Sam. Absolutely with you. Absolutely.
That's just
right.
Insane. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you that. Interesting. Glenn Beck literally wants to become an Israeli citizen. I don't understand what would drive that. I'd love to have him on and discuss that with him. I'm not here to attack him over it. I just don't agree with it and don't think it's wise. I see nothing but trouble there. All right, the U.S. Senate actually did some good things. The outcome wasn't perfect, but there is good news, lol.
Well, the good news there is that, well, the bad news first, they took a vote, a roll call vote on the amendment that Rand Paul wanted to add to the a big bill there. I think it's the spending bill. A roll call vote on audit the Fed. This is the signature issue upon which Ron Paul launched Campaign for Liberty in 2008. I mean, and they had college crowds throughout the country chanting "End the Fed" over and over. Well, audit the Fed comes first. We need to audit the Fed and then end the Fed. And Rand Paul's amendment failed by a vote of 46 in favor to 51 opposed. They needed, of course, 60 votes to pass, but that's the bad news. Now, the good news is we know...
Hold on, there is good news, though. 46 people voted in favor, though. That's a pretty large number. Now, I know it's, you know, not close enough to win, but that's a large number of people who are saying there is something here that matters. That's pretty big, Lowell. Let's not discount that. That's a big number.
I'm glad you made that point, Sam. That is a big number. 46 of our senators in the U.S. Senate voting finally to audit the Fed. You know, we've been working to get a vote in the Senate for years, Sam. So this truly is a step forward. Now, the good news is we know who we need to push, right? Because we know who voted against it and we know who voted for it. Turns out that there were three Republican senators who voted against the bill. Now, all the rest of the Republican senators voted yes. The three who voted no were Mitt Romney of Utah, Mike Rounds of South Dakota, and Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. So these are squishy senators, and we need to put more pressure on them to vote yes next time around.
Well, that's why I highlighted that Phil Lyman wants to be a senator. I'm sorry, he's running for governor, Phil Lyman, governor, not senator. Sorry,
that's
governor.
Right.
So that it doesn't apply. But I guess I'm saying we need to have a good senator replace Mitt Romney that'll vote yes. That should be, I don't want to call it a litmus test, but that ought to be one of the top issues, and we'll get into why as the broadcast unfolds today with Lowell, but that should be one of the top issues, you know, whether you'll elect somebody or not, Lowell.
That's right. And there are two people that I know of that have thrown their name in the ring to run for you to replace Mitt Romney. One is Trent Staggs, current mayor of Riverton. And the second person is Carolyn Phippen, who has been spearheading an effort to get Utah out of ERIC. So those are two
Amen.
Good.
And by the way, we had Trent on the radio with us talking about his bid for Senate. We'll have to get Carolyn on as well. I want to find out if either of them will reject the Federal Reserve and reject fake money here. Let's audit and end the Fed. And that should be one of the, in my opinion, top issues that we say you've got to be willing to stand up on, or you're not getting my vote.
Totally agree, Sam. Now, in addition, there were three Republican senators who did not vote. Those three were Mike Lee of Utah, Tim Scott of South Carolina, Tom Tillis of North Carolina. And then all of the Democrats voted against.
Before you go on, though, why? I wonder why those three didn't vote. You would think Mike Lee would stand for this.
Well, he does. He's absolutely in favor of auditing the Fed. I don't know why he wasn't there to vote, but you have to be there in person, Sam.
Understood.
And, so
and
if
that's too bad he wasn't there, because now Utah, basically, two senators virtually against, one a no vote and the other one a vote against. Utah looked pretty bad on that stand for honest money stage, Lowell.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, absolutely right, Sam. Now, all of the Democrats voted against this amendment except Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, and Kristen Sinema of Arizona. So those are probably, you know, three votes that we can continue to count on at the next opportunity.
And those are not normally people that I'd run around and praise, but you know what? When they're right, give them credit, Lowell.
That's right. Kudos to them for voting the right way on this bill. Now, you know, some people, Sam, may not think auditing the Fed is the most pressing issue at the moment. But we're here to tell you folks that the Federal Reserve is the root of most of our problems here in the United States. Take war, for example. By printing money out of thin air, the Federal Reserve allows politicians in Washington to hide the true costs of war from the American people. And while Joe Biden spouts tiresome cliches about how we're the greatest nation in the world that can do anything and everything, well, the reality, folks, is that we aren't made of money, and every single dollar spent abroad is a dollar we don't have here at home. They just have a printing machine, Sam, and they just print money whenever they want. And it really does hide the true cost of war. It also hides the problems with our crumbling infrastructure. It inflates the prices. It also manipulates elections, because if you can, you know, dish out the goodies for your constituencies, they're more likely to vote for you to reelect you. So there are.
And Mike Johnson, sadly, Speaker of the House, wants to just kick the can down the road and buy himself a little bit more time, when what we should do is be auditing and ending the Fed and literally shutting down government, and then saying we're only going to bring forward single issue bills, and we're going to fund that which is constitutional. That which is not constitutional simply will not come up for funding. And we could start there. It wouldn't take much, Lowell. It really wouldn't.
Boy, wouldn't that be a breath of fresh air if someone in the House, if a House Speaker would say those very words, we're going to do what's in the Constitution and no more.
All right, let's go ahead and skip the break. Because Michael Bolton over at 10th Amendment Center really doubles down on this audit the Fed and the Fed point. He doesn't talk about it from a Fed point of view per se. He talks about it from an inflationary point of view. Or that word that we use that really shields the truth, which we'll get into. But this is downstream reality from the point we just made with Rand Paul and others who want to audit the Fed and the Senate. 46 of them said, yes, let's get it done. All we need is a few more, and absolutely that can and should happen. And too bad those members of the House didn't help rally the Senate. We might have got across the threshold. And too bad Utah literally, I don't know, they weren't even there to stand to bat. I guess they just said no one's at the plate. We're just going to throw strikes because no one's there. Sad but true. Romney voting against it because he's kind of lame duckish. He doesn't even matter anymore. Mike Lee, too bad he wasn't there. I don't know what his reasons are. I'm not here to criticize him. I'm glad he stands with audit the Fed because we need more of them. That means 47. The number's growing, and that's what we need to keep at. But Michael Bolton doubles down with the downstream reality because of the Federal Reserve. Lol.
He says, one of the ways the government uses propaganda to increase its own power is by changing the meaning of words. He says, the word inflation is a perfect example. Supporters of the monster state use this not to describe actual inflation, but rather the effects of it. The founding generation had a much better word for it, depreciation. That is, when the supply of money is increased, its purchasing power decreases, resulting in price increases for virtually everything. And so Benjamin Franklin, he writes in his letter to me, he said, put it this way, in 1779, quote, the depreciation of the American paper is solely owing to the excessive quantities, end of quote. Charles Carroll of Carrollton agreed, quote, my greatest apprehensions arise from the depreciation of our paper money. If we emit more bills of credit, they will fall to nothing, end quote. And Nathaniel Greene noted the same thing in a 1776 letter to John Adams, quote, the emission of such large sums of money increases the price of things in production to the sums emitted, in proportion to the sums emitted, end of quote. And so, Sam, what we see here is that the founding generation described the problem far more accurately than we do today. Calling it depreciation is more accurate than calling it inflation. We have inflation because the currency has been depreciated. In other words, inflation is the result of depreciation, or put another way, depreciation causes inflation. And so when we talk about that with other people, we need to whenever they say the word inflation, I suggest that we kindly correct them, right? Help them, invite them to use the word depreciation instead of the word inflation. Why? Well, because depreciation more accurately describes what's happening. And so
let me use a concrete example to make the point, Lowell. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a simpleton, and when people use real case point examples, it helps guys like me get things on the kitchen table. So set aside words for a second, and then we'll back into words. Here's a story for you. I bought my house for $150,000 back in 2002. Now my house is worth over $500,000.
Yeah, it's still worth the same. 20
years later. I know. Hold on. Now my house is supposedly worth $500,000. Lowell brings up the quintessential point. No, Sam, your house is worth the same. And I submit he's right, but it's actually worth less because it's older. Okay?
Well,
people
think it's an asset.
They're really liabilities. The older something gets, the more maintenance it needs, the less value it has. But here's the truth. The only thing that changed is my dollar became worth less. My dollar depreciated against my house, which didn't change. Now it takes $500,000 of those dollars to buy the same house that used to cost $150,000. All that happened is the money depreciated. Lol.
I think it's all the gold plating that you've been putting on the inside of your home, Sam.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just gotten more valuable, man.
But think about it. All that's changed is the money's worth less now. My dollar won't buy as much. My dollar depreciated. And that's the only change, Lol. Really?
You're spot on, Sam. Great example. It's just a perfect example. It shows us that the value of the thing does not change, but the measuring stick used to measure the value of things has changed. And that measuring stick has been depreciated significantly in just 20 years.
Yeah, and overall, if we go back to the gold and silver constitutional days, on the average, we have literally lost 97%. We've depreciated 97% compared to real value. That's the best number we can come up with currently, Lol.
So if you had $100 in 1913 or about 1910, and here it is 110 years later, that $100 would be worth $3. That's it. That's how much we've depreciated our currency.
Yeah, the way I like to look at it is the 35 times disparaging or depreciation that you can take. So what used to buy, what you used to be able to buy for a dollar then, now takes $35 to buy now. Now, there's give and take because it depends on the commodity. For example, grain's easier to grow. You know, there's a few other anomalies that affect things. But for the most part, all you got to do is take whatever it is and say, hey, whatever cost a dollar then now costs $35 on the average, $35 to $40.
Well, and George Washington understood this very clearly. He told us back in the late 1700s, paper money has had the effect in your state that it ever will have to ruin commerce, oppress the honest, and open a door to every species of fraud and injustice. End of quote. So, Sam, it is unjust. For the government to be doing what it's doing because they are stealing from the people. It's a hidden tax. When you depreciate the currency, you are taxing the people in a way that most people do not see. They do not understand why things are costing more today than they were yesterday, but that is because it's a hidden tax on the people and their productivity. Sam?
It's because your dollar has depreciated so significantly that, hey, now they want minimum wages to be, $20 and above. What if they gave everybody $100 minimum wage? All it will do is drive the price to where the dollar becomes worth less and less. The more dollars people have, if everybody has them, pretty soon they're not important or valuable at all anymore, right? So the more they put money into the economy dishonestly, the more it depreciates. The more it depreciates, the more things cost. They call it inflation, but that's only the effects of the depreciation, is Michael Bolden's point, 10thAmendmentCenter.com, and he is spot on, ladies and gentlemen. There's another man that is spot on, and he talks about some interesting technology that Lowell's going to back us into. Yes, it relates to elections, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure does, Sam. Last Saturday, I attended a presentation in Sandy, Utah, at an Impact conference hosted by Jen Brown of the Utah Citizens for the Constitution. Jay Valentine is his name. He works for Fractal Technology. Fractal Technology, it's a company. The name Fractal is the name of a business. It's also the name of a software stack. They call it the Fractal software stack. And, he did not go into detail about his stack, this new software stack, but The claim is, and these guys have been in business for years and years, the claim is that using fractal technology, that it's 1,000 times faster than conventional databases like Oracle and SQL, and it requires 90% less storage. And so that's pretty amazing. Now, I can't speak to that because he didn't go into it, and I don't understand how it can be so much faster, but that's the claim. Now, their website says this, quote, each fractal is a small vertical software stack running in a loosely coupled process that is an independent processing entity in a distributed processing environment, end of quote. Now, but the most exciting aspect of his presentation, Sam, is that he is able to identify problems in our voter rolls very quickly and do so before election day. Now, they've been engaged in this effort in most of the battleground states, you know, the Arizona and Georgia and others. They're already engaged in these battleground states, meaning they are examining the voter rolls, the property tax rolls, and so forth in these states. And what they're finding is that there are numerous problems with the voter roll. Problems that will persuade state legislatures to take some action to clean up these rolls. In fact, they're producing some videos that should begin to come out this week or next at fractalweb.app. That's the website, fractalweb.app. I'm going to keep an eye on these developments and report on them in the future as they materialize. But you have to ask, okay, what kinds of problems are they finding? Well, numerous records in the voter rolls with the same telephone number. We're not talking one or two. We're talking tens of thousands of voter records all with the same telephone number, Sam. How do you do that? How do thousands of voters share the same telephone number? Doesn't make sense.
It only makes sense when you realize that this group called ERIC, this private group without scrutiny, can literally manipulate voter rolls under the guise of, you know, protecting our voter rolls. And when you do that, you can inject any record you want to any time without scrutiny, lol. That's what's been happening, and that's why these rolls are like that. It's obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, and also they found multiple records where the address is a vacant lot or a construction site or a bank or an apartment building without an apartment number. You know, guess what happens when you send a letter to an apartment building? Well, if there's no apartment number, it just goes into, you know, a stack for the apartment, and, you know, anybody can pick it up. Anybody in that apartment building can pick it up. Do you have people living at a construction site, a vacant lot, or at a bank? Well, we're talking about thousands of these records have addresses that correspond with a vacant lot or a construction site or a bank or whatever. So essentially, Sam, fractal is building a database of undeliverable ballots. Now, let that sink in, a database of undeliverable ballots. So it's a database that you and I will be able to access just simply with an app on our phones so that we can sit down with our legislators and show them that in our state, that we have problems. And we can do that just with a few clicks of a mouse or a few taps of the finger, and we'll be able to show them hundreds and thousands of voter records that are not legal, right? That are not legal. And, you know, and the thing that Jay said, Sam, he said, we're not going to find one location with a thousand people, but instead 1,000 locations with two or three or maybe four unrelated people at that location. See, they're hiding. They're getting good at hiding their fraud.
It's harder to spot 1,000 locations with only a couple of untied people together. That's all intentional. Mm-hmm. And so not only have you got to discuss this happening and how illegal it is, but you got to discuss who's engineered it, who's behind it, why is this the case? Is it all just an accident? Or is there an evil plan underfoot? And that's really the debate here. We'll talk more with Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, in seconds on your radio.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Corey Myers. A teacher shot by a six-year-old can sue Virginia school officials. Lance Pry explains.
A judge has ruled a teacher, Abigail Zwarner, who was shot by her six-year-old student, can proceed with a $40 million lawsuit against Virginia school officials for failing to act on warnings. The Newport News School Board argued she was only entitled to workman's compensation because the injuries happened at work.
Officials say a small-town Alabama mayor died allegedly by suicide just days after a conservative news site published pictures of him apparently wearing women's clothes and makeup. Smith Station Mayor F.L. Bubba Copeland, who was also a pastor at First Baptist Church of Phoenix City, fatally shot himself and was pronounced dead on Friday. An autopsy was scheduled for today. Former President Trump scheduled to take the stand in the Trump Organization's civil fraud trial in New York today.
Trump's sons, Eric and Donald Trump Jr., testified last week in the trial that accuses the Trump Family Organization of inflating their wealth to obtain better loans. Ivanka Trump will testify Wednesday, November 8th. After court last week, Judge Arthur Engoron barred the lawyers from discussing his interactions with his clerk under threat of serious sanctions. I'm Dave Collins.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken has a warning for Iran and any militia groups it backs that try to expand the Israel-Hamas war.
We will take every necessary step to protect our people. We're not looking for conflict with Iran. We've made that very clear. But we'll do what's necessary to protect our personnel, be they military or civilian.
Blinken speaking from Baghdad Sunday after making an unannounced trip to the West Bank. This is USA News.
I'd like to introduce you to our new sponsor, Get the Tea. Get the Tea carries all natural, non-GMO organic teas and supplements made in the USA. Get the Tea's ingredients are the purest available. My favorite is Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a gentle daily cleanse containing 12 herbs that, when combined, really keep things moving. I drink it every day, and my energy has never been better. I'm feeling great. Life Change Tea comes in three delicious flavors, natural, peppermint, and pomegranate. It's an easy and delicious way to keep your digestion on track. And for those on the go, try D365. D365 is Life Change Tea in a capsule. Drink the tea or take D365 capsules and keep your digestion running smoothly. Go to GetTheTea.com and enter discount code USA to get 10% off any size order. That's GetTheTea.com, discount code USA for 10% off your order.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lowell Nelson here on Liberty Roundtable Live. You are listening to the Sam Bushman Liberty Roundtable show. His guest this morning, this hour, we've been talking about fractal technology, this marvelous software stack that allows it's about 1,000 times faster than conventional databases. And it only requires 10% of the storage that are required by other conventional databases. And it allows the fractal technology people to identify problems with, in databases. Because databases are only as good as the information you put into the databases. If there are problems in the databases, they're difficult for current technologies to identify. But Fractal is able to do so. They ingest voter rolls records, property tax records. They've even done insurance claims where they have identified, for every accident that occurs on the street, there might be two or three claims for that accident coming from different people, different addresses, but they're really, really the same person making the same claim. And so they've been a great benefit to insurance companies, okay? So that's kind of the genesis of Fractal. And the reason we're talking about it is because they are helping to identify problems in our voter rolls. Some of the deliverables that Jay Valentine promised in 2024, then the next year, basically he's going to produce a database of undeliverable ballots in all swing states. As you know, in 2020 there were six swing states, and he's going to do this in real time before Election Day so that people can identify the problems and not allow so many, ghost voters vote. So that's cool. He's also going to do real-time voter roll analysis during early voting. Because, see, this is one of the ways they cheat us. They keep track of who has voted before. They know pretty much how you're going to vote and who you're going to vote for simply because of your voting patterns in the past, the parties you affiliate with and so forth. And then they use that in order to know how many ballots they need to manufacture in order to win the race for their preferred candidate. Well, if this analysis done by Fractal can eliminate that capability for cheating, then we're going to have much better outcomes of our elections, outcomes that actually reflect the votes cast. And then finally, he promised to shut down over $1 million in SMRF contributions. What is a SMRF contribution? Well, that was a new term to me. I had to look it up. A SMRF is a colloquial term for a money launderer who seeks to evade scrutiny from government agencies by breaking up large transactions into a set of smaller transactions so that he doesn't get caught. Well, it turns out that we have hundreds of thousands of SMRFs here in the good old U.S. of A. These are people who, for a small, a price, I guess, for a small, reward, they will take money from, huge, I hate to name names because we don't know where the money to these SMRFs comes from. But let's take George Soros for example. He's a nice punching bag for us this morning. Let's say George Soros wanted to affect the outcome of an election. He would send thousands of dollars to a person and tell them, if you will donate this money to so-and-so's campaign or to so-and-so's PAC or whatever, I will give you, $100 every time you do this, or $10 every time you do this, right? So this person then makes a $200 or $300 donation several times every day to so-and-so's election, and he gets paid on the side for doing that. That would be a SMRF. Well, that's illegal, right? That's being done. And Epoch Times did a story on this in March of this year. There are a couple of election watchdog groups, Gibson Group of Maryland and Election Watch of Wisconsin. They discovered over $200 million in laundering using SMRFs. Very interesting. Those are the three deliverables that Fractal will give us in 2024. A database of undeliverable ballots in all swing states, real-time voter roll analysis, and shutting down all the SMRFing that's going on, or at least a big chunk of the SMRFing that's going on. Now, Fractal will not claim fraud, but they will show the problems with the voter rolls. That this, by the way, is the headspace problem that Mark Cook described in his hand count roadshow events that were held throughout Utah last month. Mark is in Arizona this month. And so those of you in Arizona can visit handcountroadshow.org to locate a roadshow event near you. Now, last word on this, Sam. You'll be interested to know that Fractal's involvement in election voter rolls all started at the request of Sheriff Clark in Wisconsin. He called Fractal and asked them to investigate issues with his county's voter roll. And that is how Fractal got involved in this. They're not partisan. They're not for one side versus another. They simply want to expose the problem, and in hopes that state legislators will take steps to prevent these kinds of problems with the voter rolls in their counties. Sam?
You might be able to use big tech against big tech, Lowell.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And it sounds like the Fractal is a lot faster than the conventional big tech. So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to run circles around
and everything. I'm going to have to play with that and kind of learn more about it and everything else and have a guest on about it. I do a technology show called TechWatch Radio as well. And we'll get the Fractal folks on and kind of discuss their database technology and kind of how it works more in detail and everything. I'm looking forward to that. But all I can tell you is this, the ability to truly dig down, data mine, and get the facts on what's happening to our election databases, critical for the future, Lowell.
Absolutely right, Sam. And I can give you the telephone number if you need it from Jen Brown for Jim Valentine.
Email it to me because I want to call him for sure. I'm going to have Jay on the radio with me.
Okay, will do. Okay, well, the great thing that happened last Saturday, Sam, at the Impact Conference, I was introduced to a wonderful lady named Lydia Wallace Nuttall. And it's, I understand that you already know Lydia. Basically, she has assembled a collection of forgotten American stories. She talked about some of these stories at the conference. And of course, I love to learn history through stories. First of all, I think it is the best way to learn history. You don't fall asleep. You can more easily remember a story than you can a fact or a collection of facts. And so she had her book there. Wonderful. It's a beautiful book. I have a copy right here in my hands. And she has in her book a quote from George Washington, which I really love. He says this, quote, a primary object should be the education of our youth in the science of government. In a republic, what species of knowledge can be equally important? And what duty more pressing than communicating it to those who are to be the future guardians of the liberties of the country? End quote. Wow, just powerful. I mean, and this book is assembled in a way that it's appealing to youngsters. You could be used in homeschools, in private schools, and even in public schools. The first story she talked about in her collection is about Francis Scott Key, who authored our national song or anthem. It was in the August of 1814, the British set fire to Washington, D.C. The flames were visible 40 miles away in Baltimore, but torrential rain dampened the fires and kept them from spreading. I think that was a divine blessing, by the way, that the rainstorms came and put out those fires. The British advanced toward Baltimore. Now, there's a young lawyer there named Francis Scott Key. He had heard that the British had captured a town physician, a beloved town physician, Dr. William Beans. So he got permission from President James Madison to arrange a prisoner exchange for Dr. Beans. Francis was accompanied by Colonel John Skinner. They found Dr. Beans and they made the exchange, but the British held them on a truce ship so they could not warn Baltimore of the impending attack. So on the morning of September 13, 1814, the 25-hour bombardment of Fort McHenry began. Cannons fired bombshells that often exploded prematurely, raining down flaming shrapnel. Rockets shrieked through the air, leaving trails of fiery red glare as they arched through the night sky, bursting into flame wherever they struck. See, you're getting a sense of how skilled a writer that Lydia is. Throughout the rainy and smoke-filled night, Skinner and Key viewed the battle and saw the Star-Spangled Banner waving over Fort McHenry as it was sporadically illuminated by exploding bombs. By dawn of the following day, the British gave up their hope of taking the city of Baltimore and ending the bombardment. Even though their ship was anchored 8 miles away from Fort McHenry, Skinner and Key could still see the stars and stripes waving over the fort. So, relieved and inspired by the sight, Francis captured his feelings of joy and gratitude on the back of a letter that he had in his pocket. In 1931, the words of his poem became our official national anthem. And Sam, I especially like the second line of the last verse, quote, blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation, end quote. I like it, Sam, because it acknowledges the hand of God in the victory. Well, not only
and
does
I like
Lydia
it because
have...
it articulates what we need to do per God's direction to receive that victory. It talks about peace. We've got to follow the Prince of Peace. We've got to follow the plan. If we repent, he will heal our land and protect us, Lowell.
Absolutely right. So I commend Lydia Wallace Nuttall for her book. I love it, and I love the fact that she made it so easily consumable by school children. Students of all ages, whether it's grade school, middle school, high school, college age, whatever, the book has thought questions, vocabulary words, geographic locations, activities. It is a wonderful book to have, and I so appreciate just hearing about it and meeting Lydia for the very first time. I don't think I'd ever met her before that. Wonderful lady and a wonderful love of our country. Sam?
All right. Well, I know Lydia Nuttall well. In fact, I went to her house and helped her set up her broadcast equipment. We are involved with Lydia big time, Lowell. You might not realize this, but the Loving Liberty Radio Network, which I run, has several different podcasts that Lydia is involved in. One of them that she does is called We the Kids. And believe it or not, it's a We the Kids radio podcast that helps children understand liberty and the founders. And I mean, it's just tremendous. And it's done where children love to listen to it. She's also involved in another broadcast that we actually produce for her called Ask an Immigrant. And the idea is, you know, everybody wants to get all uptight about immigrants and have a debate about legal and illegal and all that. And she says, you know, I understand all that. But let's just say, why are they coming here? And what are their dreams? What are their experiences? What did it take to come here? How do they notice a difference in where they come from and where they are now and why and what drives them? What blessings? And the stories they tell are riveting, Lowell. Ask an Immigrant. It's available at lovingliberty.net. But we praise Lydia for her incredible work. We've also teamed her up with the Loving Liberty Radio Network and Liberty Village now. So we are working with her. She's starting to do some education that relates to Liberty Village down in St. George, this new event. UnitedWePledge.org to learn more about that, and it's putting that together. But, man, Lydia is really working with us. She's got shorts or videos that talk about Ask an Immigrant to highlight some of the stories. And, man, anybody that you know that's an immigrant that has a story to tell, we need to get her in touch with or get them in touch with Lydia, because she will do a phenomenal job, and she will literally, you know what, find out what makes the clock tick. She'll find out what's in their hearts and minds in a way that just absolutely makes you so grateful for this country. It's not even funny. You know, we take America for granted, a lot of us, but not when you hear these stories, you don't. The work that Lydia Nuttall does is tremendous work, Lowell.
Oh, I love to hear that, Sam. So glad that you're working with her, because she has so much to offer, and you have so much capability of helping deliver that to so many people, Sam. Kudos to you both.
Yeah, we're going to throw down for Liberty. Where we go, that's where we have Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, with us every week on your radio, because he highlights just tremendous, tremendous information, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? I want to be blessed with victory and peace, because we follow the Prince of Peace, and no doubt Jesus Christ obtains the victory, ladies and gentlemen. Here's a question for you. Is America on the verge of, quote, World War III? I pray the answer is no. But David Pine came and spoke about it. We talked about him coming up to speak at the First Friday event in Utah County. And he did. He came and spoke. And Lowell's got the update and the report of what we learned. Lowell?
There were about 85 people at the meeting. David is Deputy Director, National Operations for the EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He's a former International Programs Manager on U.S. Army Headquarters staff, responsible for armaments cooperation with the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, the Americas, and Africa. So he's an amazing gentleman. I did not know so much about all that he's been doing, but he has really been doing a ton over the past several decades. I loved his first slide, Sam. It was a map of the world, and it said, "Why is our military here?" with arrows pointing to numerous locations in Europe, Asia, and Africa.
In other words, when the invasion real term is everywhere, right?
Everywhere.
And then look at the arrows on the map, we're everywhere, Lowell.
And then the quote, or the quote on the map continues, "When the invasion is here," with arrows pointing to our southern border. It's just a great. It points out the ludicrousy of putting our military everywhere except on our southern border, where the real invasion is happening. Anyway, David identified three schools of U.S. foreign policy, and then he said this, quote, "There is a fundamental misunderstanding about Russia and China, which is that if we don't fight them along their borders, they will attack us here at home. The truth is the exact opposite. If we didn't send U.S. military forces and arms to interfere in their spheres of influence, they would never attack us. The threat of Sino-Russian nuclear, EMP, and massive cyber attack is directly proportional to the degree we threaten them. The more we escalate our war against Russia in Ukraine, the greater the chance they will destroy the U.S. and our allies. The same
and
is
David
true.
David highlights a principle Ron Paul has been speaking about for decades, ladies and gentlemen, at Campaign for Liberty and the Ron Paul Institute. Go ahead, Lowell.
That's exactly right. And David says the same is true if we fight China over Taiwan. Well, so David calls himself a realist. He believes war should be a last resort in defense of U.S. vital national interest. Amen. To ensure U.S. independence, self-sufficiency, and national security. He does not believe that we should provoke conflict, but should support negotiated agreements to end wars quickly or prevent them from occurring in the first place. And this, he said, it was much to my surprise, because I grew up with the idea that Nixon was a bad dude. David said, quote, "Nixon was probably the smartest, advocating that the U.S. engage in peaceful accommodations of our adversaries, with each side making reciprocal concessions to avoid war," end quote. He said, quote, "President Kennedy's solution to the Cuban Missile Crisis was a great example of how to prevent nuclear wars, when he offered to never invade Cuba and to withdraw our nuclear weapons from Italy and Turkey in exchange for the Soviets withdrawing their nuclear missiles from Cuba," end quote. He said the neoconservative big lie is that World War II was caused by the British policy of appeasing Germany with the Munich Agreement, when in fact it was caused by their decision to abruptly abandon it. So for those of you who are World War I, World War II buffs, you would have really enjoyed this conversation. David then chronicled the disastrous record of U.S. military and interventionism from World War I down to the current conflict in Ukraine, caused by U.S. authorization of the Maidan coup to overthrow President Yanukovych and subsequently refuse to guarantee to Russia that Ukraine would never join NATO. And see, that's the provocation right there, is that we refuse to promise that Ukraine will never join NATO. So David believes that World War III, if it happens,
get out of NATO.
Yeah, for sure. He believes that World War III, if it happens, will most likely be caused by Biden's decision to fight Russia in Ukraine and defend Taiwan militarily. So are we on the brink of World War III? Well, I think we are, but we can avoid it if we just make the right political decisions. But if we continue to provoke Russia and Taiwan, then we're simply inviting the beginning of World War III. David observed that the provocative U.S. policy of military confrontation and containment has caused Russia and China to ally more closely together and to coordinate their offensive plans against us. And I think that's true. David said the five biggest U.S. mistakes of the Cold War period are, number one, breaking our promise to Russia about expanding NATO to the eastward, granting most favored nation status to communist China, signing arms control treaties unilaterally disarming the U.S. strategic nuclear arsenal, failing to allow Germany, Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan to develop nuclear missiles, and number five, rejecting Russia's attempt and efforts to become part of the economic and security architectures of Europe. And by the way, Sam, did you know that Russian leaders have asked to join NATO in 1990, also in 91, and also again in 2002? Well, they were rebuffed every single time. Why don't we want, I'm not all for NATO, but if NATO exists, why not allow Russia to join NATO? they wouldn't have allied with China.
Trouble and conflict in the Middle East if you allow that to happen.
Right. Oh, man. So anyway, David said
that
is
the quintessential problem. David's right on how to extract ourselves from this, Lowell.
Yeah, he is. He said, just as I predicted back in April, Russia annexed four Ukrainian regions due to Zelensky's refusal to negotiate a peace deal ending the war. Contrary to Western lies and propaganda, Russia is winning. The war has proved to be an unmitigated geostrategic debacle for the West because it has caused Russia to align more closely with China militarily and threaten NATO, with Ukraine losing 200,000 soldiers killed and Russia losing about 65,000 troops. So not only have we basically provoked this war, but we're basically responsible for the deaths of these soldiers.
Yeah, 200,000 in Ukraine. Dead, we're worse off.
Yeah, it's simply unthinkable. And I'm friends with dozens of people in Ukraine and several in Russia, Sam. I don't want to lose my friends. I love my friends. And I love the people of Russia and the people of Ukraine. I don't want to see them fighting. These are our brothers and sisters over there. And instead of our brokering a peace deal, we are provoking additional war. I just find that just mind-boggling.
In the lie, Sam. In the name of peace.
David also said Russia has been fighting a special military operation in Ukraine and has largely achieved most of its military objectives and has been offering a ceasefire since September. Did you know that, Sam? That Russia has been offering a ceasefire since September? That's like 3 months ago.
I actually do know that. Yep, September, but we won't October, take November. It. We want war.
Yeah.
It's insane, sir.
David said the U.S. has not developed a single nuclear weapon or delivery system since 1992. Quote, U.S. dropped out of the nuclear arms race in 1992 and let Russia and China win it. We have no plans to increase the size of the U.S. nuclear arsenal by even one strategic nuclear warhead. Russia and China will have nuclear supremacy over us by the next year. Regarding this imbalance, David said that since the Cold War ended, the U.S. has unilaterally disarmed itself of 94% of its nuclear weapons. Well, and then he also went into a discussion about how our having nuclear weapons has been a deterrent, right? Because they know that if they fire nuclear weapons at us, then we'll fire back at them, and it'll just result in mutually assured destruction. And so having the weapons has been the deterrent that has kept the peace during all of these years, these past decades. But because we're so far down in nuclear strategic weapons, then it's simply an invitation for Russia and China to overpower us. And so right now there's four major powers, Russia, China, probably China's at the top, then Russia, then the United States, and then Israel. Those are the four strongest nuclear powers in the world. Boy, there's just so much to cover here, and we're almost out of time, Sam. But there is hope for peace, and David laid out a number of things we can do to get out of this mess. For instance, he offered this peace plan and was immediately blacklisted by Ukraine. He's on the 35 most wanted American peace activists list, alongside Tulsi Gabbard and Tucker Carlson and Senator Rand Paul and Colonel Douglas McGregor, by the way. So this David Pine is on this list of the 35 most wanted peace activists. How would you like to be on that list, Sam? That'd be a real feather in your cap.
Yeah, I'm anyway. Praying for peace, and I'm most wanted for it. There, that sounds like Jesus Christ, huh?
That's right. His 5-point, well, it was a 10 or 15 point plan, but I picked out 5 points of his plan. Ukraine agrees to stay out of NATO. Ukraine recognizes Crimea as part of Russia. They concede Crimea, in other words. Russia supports Ukraine joining the EU. Ukraine destroys all nuclear capable ballistic and cruise missiles, and then Russia withdraws its troops from Ukraine, except from that part of the Donbass that which it already occupies.
And I appreciate his, you know, many point plan, and I agree for the most part with it. But I would say this: we walked right in, as Ron Paul wisely points out. We can just walk right out. Let's get it done. We don't need to be involved in the entanglements at all, Lowell.
Absolutely right. Let's remember 2 Corinthians 7:14. The Lord promises you and me, Sam, all of us, If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Sam?
Amen. Thank you, Lowell. Great work as always. Ladies and gentlemen, campaignforliberty.org. God save the Republic of the United States of America.